This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Mireia Torres. How are you, Mireia?
Hi, how are you?
You've just done a lovely presentation on talking about Miguel's ancestral vines, but I also want to talk a wee bit about some of the carbon mitigation that you guys are doing, because I always look at Torres and I think of you guys as one of the leaders in terms of carbon mitigation. I don't know if that's right or wrong. Tell us, Maria, is that true?
Well, we are doing our best. Of course, since 2008, we have done a lot of efforts in the company in order to reduce our carbon footprint. We have done several things. I don't know if you want to mention them.
We'll talk about them.
Okay.
We'll talk about them. But just so the listeners know, you're Mireia Torres from Miguel Torres. Do you want to tell us a bit about yourself and what you do at Miguel Torres and maybe your family connection?
Yeah, I'm a member of the fifth generation. I have been always working in production and research. I'm a chemical engineer and I'm a winemaker. I studied winemaking in France and grape growing. In the company, we are really very focused on climate change because it's something that is affecting a lot to all the sector. And since 2008 till 2024, we have reduced with several things that we have done more than 40% the carbon footprint in our company. Our next objective is to reduce the carbon footprint till 60% in 2030. So what are we doing for that? We are reducing the weight of the bottles. 95% of the bottles have reduced the weight.
That's down to 420 grams.
Yeah,
exactly. Which is fairly light.
Yeah. Then also we have invested a lot in a photovoltaic panel and renewable energy like biomass boiler in all the wineries. For instance, in the main winery in Pacs del Penedès, we are producing now more than 50% of the energy that we need in the winery. And also we are also participating in some projects, like we are putting solar panels in the vineyards in order to produce a little bit of shade, but also produce energy that can be used. So, we are analyzing how is this affecting to the maturity and productivity and quality of the wines.
You showed us an interesting photo of that, and it's basically, if you imagine a pergola, and you're going up, 5 meters, I think you said,
yes.
And then you've got solar panels sitting above the vineyard.
Yes.
That's nice because it does two things. First of all, it effectively lowers your temperature,
yes,
in the vineyard, which is good in climate change, and also produces energy. Yeah. How long have you been doing that, and what's the sort of pros and cons of it?
It's a project that we started this year. We are analyzing like two different densities of panels. There are some that allow more light that goes through, and others less, that produce more energy. So we are just analyzing this, and we will see the results in the next years. But I have to say that agrovoltaism is something that is already in the market. And for instance, in France, there are big facilities, grape growers that are working with a lot of hectares with these systems. But their solar panels in general, they are adjusted depending on where does the sun come.
Yep.
And in our case, they are fixed.
Yep. But in France, are they still sitting above the vines as well?
Yes.
Okay. I haven't seen that before, so.
Yes. Yeah.
That's pretty cool. And you've got fixed ones, but I suppose you can set them up to face south, so it doesn't matter too much.
We just wanted the concept of fixed solar panels because the cost is much lower.
Mm, yeah.
You need less maintenance. And by the other side, we wanted to see with a different type of panels how are the results, no? Because what is also important is that the vines need also some light to have their production. So we wanted to see that, yeah.
I always thought for photosynthesis, you didn't really need direct sunlight necessarily. As long as it was light, there's enough light out there, so you don't need direct sunlight for photosynthesis.
Not really, but it is important to have enough light to flowering and then the fruit. Mm.
You mentioned you're doing lightweight bottles, 420 grams with 95% of your wines
in
lightweight bottles. There's, in the last year or so, there's been a number of glass manufacturers starting up plants that are either using hydrogen as a fuel source or even electricity as a fuel source.
Mm-hmm.
And that would remove the need to go lightweight if you've got totally zero carbon energy, which is the main source of energy. Have you guys looked at bringing in or purchasing some of those bottles?
Yes, but there are very few that are doing that. So it's something that I hope it will come in a bigger proportion in the market, because nowadays the majority of the bottles that you buy, they don't come from these characteristics, no, from origin. So for the moment, the carbon footprint that from each bottle of wine is quite huge.
Yeah.
And that's why we reduce the weight. And also we did we participated in a project of research with the Spanish government and another winery in order to see how is the life cycle when you are reusing the bottle several times from the restaurant to the plant and then to the winery, and how is it working, no? And it was very interesting, because at the end you can really reduce, if the distances are not very high, you can reduce a lot the carbon footprint. The problem perhaps that, and it would be very interesting that, if we could have, you know, one or two different shapes for certain segments of wines, no?
Yeah.
That would make the things much easier in order to reuse the bottles.
Yeah, consistency, so that every bottle's the same, so you can get pallets and pallets of the same stuff so you can fill your bottles up. Makes sense. One of the things you mentioned, and this is particularly relevant for Spain, is irrigation.
Hmm.
And you're talking about putting in a lot of irrigation ponds and things like that. But you mentioned buried irrigation. Now, most of our listeners think of irrigation as either flood irrigation, sprinkler irrigation, or drip irrigation. But buried irrigation is something that only really came up on my radar about 2 or 3 months ago. And I've never really spoken to someone who's been using buried irrigation. Do you want to just tell us what it is?
Well, it's a drip irrigation, but you have all the conduction. You just have the conductions in the soil, and then you lose less water, no, during all this process.
Mm.
And also you are promoting that the roots of the plant go a little bit further, no? They are not stuck in one place.
Yeah.
No? You are promoting the use of the soil, no? And at the end, when you are doing this drip irrigation, you are just adjusting the quantity of water in some moments during the vegetative period or maturity period from the grapes, no?
When I was reading up about buried irrigation, there was concerns about the drippers clogging up, and that became a problem, or potentially is a problem for it. Do you see much of that as an issue? Is there a lot of maintenance involved in trying to keep the drippers dripping?
No, it's important to do a very good maintenance, especially after the season. You have to do the right maintenance of all these conductions in order to avoid problems like that. Yeah.
And how much water do you save compared to normal drip irrigation?
I would say 30%.
30%? Oh, that's quite important in a dry area, isn't it? Okay, and how much extra does it cost to install on a new vineyard, not on an old, retrofitting an old vineyard would be a nightmare.
Hmm. No, the cost is almost the same.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because at the end you just can decide to put in the conduction system or to borrow it. But it's, when you are doing the plantation, the cost is the same.
Okay, one of the things with drip irrigation is you've got some control over, well, certainly when the vines receive the water, but sometimes you can control what blocks or what sectors get the water as well. So some areas are going to need more water than other water.
Yes, we have sensors in the soil.
Okay.
So what we do is that, of course, we do not have sensors in all the plots, but we do vigor maps with the satellites, and we analyze which are the areas that have much bigger, others that have less. And then we put different sensors in to represent these areas. And then we can see how much water is still in the soil or in different dips, four different dips.
Yep.
And with this information, and also, of course, that is very important, the visit of the grape grower that looks at the plant, then we take the decisions of irrigation or not. No?
Yeah.
And then it's important also to see which is the strategy. What do you want with this vineyard? No? If you want more production or less production and very high quality. I mean, it's you have to take the decision of which is the strategy with each plot. And then also to see, there are some periods that it's better not to irrigate too much because, for instance, it's the growing of the grape, no? If you irrigate, then perhaps you are going to have bigger grapes, no? And this is not perhaps what you are searching, no?
Or encourage vegetative growth.
Yeah. So there are some periods that it's better not to irrigate, but others that is important and you have to find the right quantity for each variety and each place.
Yeah, people talk about a little bit of water stress.
Yeah.
After veraison, but before harvest and things like that.
Yes, exactly. It's before the veraison.
Oh, just before, is it?
Yes. It's, after the, when you have the grape from pea size, no,
yep.
You say, it's, until you have the normal grape, before the veraison, no? This period is better not to irrigate too much, but then before and after is not a problem.
Okay, that's cool. Other things you talked about were things like planting trees every sixth row, and you saw some vines that looked, in one of the pictures you showed, you had a vineyard where you had three vines quite close together, and then you had a big gap, and then another three vines close together. What's all this different vine widths and sizes going?
I don't know exactly now how are the distances in this plantation, but I think it's every six rows we plant some trees, and this is a small plot just to do a trial. It's a pilot of a project, and our idea was to plant different plants and also trees in the middle of the rows of this vineyard in order to give more shade and also to give more nutrients to the soil because of these other plants, small plants.
Sorry, what was that? More
shade and nutrients.
Nutrients?
Yes.
Okay, are you running legumes or something like that?
No, not really. This is with more the regenerative, no? We are planting bushes and trees.
Yeah.
And the idea is to give nutrient also with these bushes and then also with the trees and shadow.
Okay, so you're getting shade, but how do you get nutrients into the soils? Because I always thought, unless you're a legume, like a bean or whatever, which are nitrogen fixing, everything else takes stuff out of the soil.
Yeah, well, there are different kinds of bushes that they are going to plant. Some of them more give more nutrients than others, but this is a little bit the philosophy that they have.
Okay. The other thing that you guys mentioned was, and you showed this in your vineyard, a big, almost like a balloon that you gather the CO2 up. I presume it's from fermentation CO2, is it?
Yes. So the engineer department in our company developed a system in order to capture this CO2 and to manage to keep it during the year in order to inertize the tanks from the wine in the winery, because we were just buying CO2, no? So
yeah.
Now we are reusing it for inertization of the tanks. And nowadays we are capturing about 100 tons of CO2.
And you can pre-flush the tanks to make sure there's no oxygen in the tanks to avoid oxidation.
Exactly. Our idea, and now also we are working with a startup that is called Orchestra, that is helping us to increase the purity of this CO2, because this CO2 that we are using has aromas, because
yes.
It's coming from a fermentation.
Now
we are going to be much more purity, and we are going to be able to search other uses for this CO2.
So other people who might want to use the CO2 or?
Yes, other companies.
Okay. So do you produce more CO2 than you need for your own needs?
Yes, because in the fermentation now we are just capturing 10% of the carbon dioxide from the alcoholic fermentation. So there is possibility to capture more and have other uses.
Oh, okay. And is the quality of the CO2 high enough?
Will be, yeah.
It will be. You need scrubbers to clean it, I presume. Mm. All right. Okay, that's cool. One of the last things that you talked about, you just touched on, and I've sort of been trying to find more about this was using UV lights for mildew reduction, because molds and mildew, obviously, particularly in places like the UK here, they're downy mildew, powdery mildew, and people spend a fortune spraying and using a lot of chemicals on the vineyards to manage something.
Yeah.
And UV light seems to be a good way of managing mildew.
We are using now for powdery mildew and for mildew. We pass with the tractor and the UV light, and with this light, just with a few seconds, enhancing the synthesis of the natural defense that are called phytoalexins. And this natural defense means that if you put less treatment, 30% less, you are going to have the same efficiency. This is what we are now working in this project. So it's not in production, it's just a research project, mm-hmm. a demonstration project that is a live project, European project.
Because when I first heard it, I thought the UV light attacked the mildew, but you're saying no, it's actually enhancing the natural defensive properties of the vineyard.
Yes, because also there is another use for UV light in Australia thing that they do at night. Mm-hmm. And then it seems to be that it's more focused just in mildew.
Yeah, and that takes out the mildew as opposed to spraying as well.
Yes, I don't know how it works, but it seems to be that it's just a focus on mildew and just the treatment in the leaves, yeah.
Okay, and how far have you got with your process where you run some UV lights and then you spray it and that helps the efficiency?
Yeah, well, we still have to do more trials, more harvests. So for the moment, we don't have really big conclusions for this project.
Yeah.
So we have to wait a little bit, because also the last years, they were so dry that there was very small fungus disease. It was very complicated to get conclusions, no? This year, we are going to get more conclusions because there was more pressure, fungus pressure in the vineyards with the rains and...
Yeah, okay, now that makes sense, So we'll see how that goes. Yeah, it's a work in progress.
But what is really interesting also to reduce the treatments is the variable application. So you are working, like, you make vigor maps with images, with satellites or with drones.
Yep.
With drones is much better. And then with these vigor maps, you program the application of the product with a geolocalization in your tractor.
Yep.
And so when your tractor goes through the vineyard, with the location opens more or less product application in each moment. So, and with this system, variable application, you can reduce more than 30% the products, and
okay.
It works.
Okay, so do that, UV lights, and you might be able to halve your spraying perhaps.
I don't know
Who
if
knows?
Half, but but it helps to reduce, of course.
But you are making a compromise here between less chemicals and more compaction of the soil if you're running your tractor up and down more often.
Well, we are not running the tractor more often because it's just...
If you are using UV lights, you will be running the tractor.
But we are putting perhaps this UV light, doing another thing with the tractor, and so we are not doing more passes with the tractor.
All right, Maria, we'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank
Cheers.
You.